Welcome to Bullies, Wimps, and Poverty Pimps, a bi-weekly podcast with me, Dr. Kish Kumi Price.
Look at her. She thinks she cute. She thinks she's smart. I remember the young bullies saying things like that to me in elementary school. And of course, I would try my best to avoid them. There wasn't fear attached, but there was frustration. I was annoyed that they had no clue what I actually thought about myself. Yet here they were telling me who I thought I was and broadcasting it to the world, or at least my little world at Doyle Ryder Elementary School in Flint, Michigan. I thought I was cute is what they said. I thought I was smart. As I tried to understand what I had done to cause such a spotlight for them to even notice me, or what I had said that would have caused them to obviously not like me, I couldn't reach any answers that made sense anyway. I welcome you to the second episode of Bullies, Wimps, and Poverty Pimps. Until I began to process what they actually said, she thinks she cute and she thinks she's smart, I had grown accustomed to correcting my own English as I matriculated through school. So, I mean, I still struggle with it at times, resisting what I want to say for what's considered proper English. So I'm sitting there one day after carrying the weight of their words as I went to my class, and it just hit me as I'm sitting there, as I'm actually correcting their English in my head on that particular day. I'm thinking, no, it's actually she thinks she's cute and she thinks she's smart. Say it right if you're going to say it at all. That's what was going through my head. Then it hit like a ton of bricks and it sat heavy on me at that time. I said, no, they think I'm cute and they think I'm smart. Then I felt sad for them. My frustration then turned into sadness. I thought they must not feel like they are cute or smart. In fact, they might feel ugly and stupid. And then I wonder who made them feel that way. Well, let's face it, many of the bullies that we encounter in the professional space and in our day-to-day lives are little bullies that never healed from their personal traumas, grew up, and continue to have poor thinking about themselves from their younger years. It could be a number of bad experiences that led them to form these bad opinions of themselves, but most likely, you and I will never know. We won't know what happened to create the monsters that many of them have become. But we can understand, just like I did, that it really has nothing to do with you. In the last episode, I provided some context regarding the definitions of bullies, wimps, and poverty pimps. Today, we are going to learn the ways of the bully. Asking you to go back to that first episode just to get some grounding. But bully strategies become more pronounced as we understand why they choose to bully in the first place. Generally, their motives are derived from their faulty assumptions and typically selfish ambitions that lead to their crisscross actions. And no, I didn't say crisscross. I use the word quisquous, Q-U-I-S-Q-U-O-U-S, which means hard to deal with, dubious, of people having a character difficult to assess. And that was my attempt at applying the word genius word of the day to my vocabulary. But yes, bullies specialize in quisquous behavior. So why should we even care about how bullies think? I mean, if you really think about it, don't you reach a certain age where you can just choose who's in your circle and avoid places and spaces where you feel like bullies thrive or where they occupy space? Sure. But the problem is most of us cannot avoid or afford to avoid going to work. The truth is that bullies are everywhere. They're at restaurants. They're in the workplace. They're at your kid's school. They are just more dangerous when they are in professional settings and you have to work with them, especially if they have certain authority or authoritative power, right, that they can use as a weapon against their victims. Around the time, and it's kind of providing some context here, around the time that I was working to publish the first episode of this podcast, I became aware of Dr. Antoinette, known as Bonnie, Candia Bailey's death. She attended Lincoln University to attain her Bachelor of Science degree in sociology, just giving you a little bit of history. She received her MA from Michigan State University in rehabilitation counseling. And then she completed her doctoral studies in leadership at North Carolina A&T University. She had an amazing career in higher education that led her back to where it all started, her alma mater, back to Lincoln University. She accepted a role as the vice president for student affairs. When she was hired into this role, she started it in May of 2023. However, she received a termination letter on January 3rd of 2024. These dates matter for a reason, as you will hear as we go on. But how does a beloved member of the Lincoln University campus and community and the greater community of impactful higher ed leaders in our nation receive such a letter, a termination letter, when she had not even been in the role for a year and had a wonderful career that preceded that position? Most universities would not have even issued the employee's annual review at that time because it hadn't hit a year yet. It's about 8 months. It is stated that she sent an email to her direct report, which was the university's president, John B. Mosley, on January 8, 2024, alleging that he had subjected her to months of harassment, bullying, and racial discrimination. Alumni who spoke with her after she received the termination letter said that she had shared many concerns about the president and his performance. It was alarming. She stated that he was controlling and unwilling to take input, in her words. The reason why this story is so impactful is that Dr. Bonnie died by suicide on the same day that she sent the email at the age of 49. Her death inspired people to protest on campus, and it also galvanized a national discussion of the mistreatment of Black women in higher education. Her dissertation is titled, My Sister, Myself: The Identification of Sociocultural Factors That Affect the Advancement of African-American Women into Senior Level Administrative Positions. Now, it is highly ironic and infuriating that this intelligent and impactful leader identified and deeply researched the struggle that many Black women have in senior level administrative positions, only for her to die as one of the many victims of such abuse. As she stated in her abstract for that dissertation, she said, attempts must be made to address the issues that confront African-American women, such as being treated like the help, outsiders, keeping them away from the table, having a voice, and discounting their experiences, skill set, and value to higher education because of their race, age, and gender. Well, I shared all of that because her story was a gut punch for me. I felt like I knew Bonnie and her struggle and had never even known of her until the story of her death. Why? Because Bonnie was me. Bonnie was she. The she who stands for the better way. She who stood for justice. She who identified the problems and worked to call them out and solve them. She operated within the proper channels to no avail. Ultimately, the abuse that Bonnie endured led to her death. That is why this topic is so important. People are being subjected to abusive situations in the workplace and feel like they have no power or support to do the work that they were hired to do. Name one day of the week in which that is okay. The answer is there is not one day. There will never be a day that that is okay. Not today is the charge. And I encourage you to not only identify bullying as abuse and mistreatment, but to stand against it for you and your fellow colleagues and community members. We say not today. So let's move into sharing how to identify these bullies and their strategies. If we understand how they move, we can identify them and work to remove them from their domains. So bear with me as I share this, but it's highly important. I'm going to share an article written by Dr. Dorothy Susskind, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, in Psychology Today, entitled The Six Stages of Workplace Bullying. Workplace bullying begins like a blister, small and undetected. Over time, however, it can render targets immobile, fully engrossed in pain, and completely surprised by what transpired. This is Dr. Dorothy Susskind's article, and she goes on to say, as a researcher and university professor, I have interviewed over 200 targets of workplace bullying across 24 industries, 27 states, and 15 countries. So this is a global issue. That's my sidebar. Back to the article. Most of these individuals were unaware that they were under attack until deeply rooted in the battle. Many experienced relief when they were able to name the abuse and understand the stages of the bullying cycle. According to Davenport, Schwartz, and Elliott, workplace bullying is a malicious attempt to force a person out of the workplace through unjustified accusations, humiliation, general harassment, emotional abuse, and or terror. This may result in mental trauma and physical distress fostered by a toxic culture that tolerates and at times propels the abuse. Though workplace bullying catches targets off guard, the cycle is highly predictable. It unfolds over distinct stages, which were first documented by organizational psychologists Hines Lehman, and later expanded upon by other researchers, including Duffy and Sperry, and the namees at Workplace Bullying Institute. Though each target's experience is unique, the typical trajectory is described, as I will state here. Number one, target identification. According to the namees at the Workplace Bullying Institute, targets of workplace abuse share common characteristics. They are highly competent, creative, and top performers. They're uninterested in office politics and possess a benevolent worldview. Targets tend to be highly respected in their work community, and colleagues often seek them out for advice. In contrast, bullies tend to be narcissistic, lacking in job expertise, and adept at taking credit for the efforts of others. Bullies often operate behind a veil of secrecy, seeking control through manipulation, gossip, sabotage, gaslighting, and isolation. Bullies are often threatened by targets' competence, creativity, and social capital, and thus go to work attempting to push them out. Number two, jealousy and battle plans. Once the bully identifies his or her target, he or she starts to plot their dismissal. He often begins by ingratiating himself, pretending to be a friend, an ally, in an effort to encourage the target to divulge personal information that can later be used as ammunition. The bully works to spot the target's strengths, so in subsequent stages, he can attack them as weaknesses in an effort to erode the target's confidence. For example, if the target is an exemplary writer, the bully may take away her writing responsibilities, citing incompetence. Number three, precipitating event. The precipitating event is not the cause of the workplace bullying, but rather the bully's invitation to launch the attack. It may be something as simple as the target securing a promotion one of the bully's friends was vying for, or a successful initiative the target spearheaded that inadvertently stole the bully's spotlight. The bully uses this event as an opportunity to stir unrest and recruit bystanders to participate in the abuse. Number four, fourth stage, underground battle. The initial attacks are most often quiet in the form of lunchtime gossip, insincere showings of concern like, "Trevor sure looks tired," and whispers of incompetence such as, "Did you notice the mistakes Chanel made during this morning's presentation?" Next, the bully may begin to secretly interview colleagues regarding the target's personality, planting seeds of doubt and disdain while advising them to keep their distance in an effort not to become part of the problem. Studies show that bullies frequently contact human resources to express their concerns regarding the target's performance and mental health. Often, HR will initially rebuff, citing the target's stacks of accolades and accomplishments, yet will eventually relent and start the documentation process that the bully knows is necessary for the target's termination. In addition, most bullies will share their concerns with upper management, creating employment protection in the event the target later attempts to go over their head to solicit help. Number five, escalating attacks and mobbing. HR may place the target on a performance improvement plan, known as a PIP, offering vague reasonings and unattainable goals. At this point, rumors will often intensify, the sabotage increases, and the target will be uninvited to meetings and social events, and then be penalized for missing information, witnessing the abuse, and fearful of being targeted next. Most bystanders join in on the bullying and cut all friendly contact with the target. As the stress compounds and the isolation intensifies, the target's feelings of hopelessness can be overwhelming. The WBI 2012 study of workplace bullying found that most targets incur stress or stress-induced physical and mental suffering that may include hypertension, gastrointestinal issues, migraines, anxiety, depression, panic attacks, and symptoms of PTSD. At this point, many targets appeal to the bully's superiors for help. Yet due to the bully's earlier priming, the target's concerns are often minimized and dismissed. And number six, final resignation, cover-up and recovery. After approximately 6 to 12 months of unrelenting emotional abuse, 74% of targets will be transferred, terminated, or constructively discharged. In an effort to cover up the abuse, some organizations offer compensation packages in exchange for signing a non-disclosure agreement, NDA, forever silencing the target's story. And breaking away from the article, many of you recall that from that first episode talking about that NDA. Back to the story. At this stage, targets are left unemployed, financially strapped, and without health insurance at the very moment when their health is most vulnerable. Following their departure, the bully may continue the character assassination, hampering the target's efforts to secure new employment. Instead of addressing the toxic culture that sanctioned the bullying, some organizations will engage in Orwellian doublespeak, such as, the stress was too much for him, or we wish we could say more, but it is a human resources issue. However, all is not lost. The target will find hope and redemption by securing a job at a new organization with an innovative culture whose values and mission align with her own. Many targets also find healing by lobbying for the enactment of protective workplace legislation and advocating for others who have had their dignity stripped at work. It is important to understand the trajectory of workplace abuse because that which can be identified can be stopped. Bullying can be called out. Bystanders can become upstanders. And creativity can thrive in the context of an organizational culture that insists on psychological safety on the job. And that is the end of the article. Why was it necessary to share that information in its full form? Well, it is because we sometimes ignore the obvious. It is nearly impossible to effectively work with a bully. That's the obvious. As you saw those six stages play out, working with bullies and authority is on another level and can be compared to working to accommodate egos and inferiority complexes while simultaneously feeling forced to pretend that you are in the presence of superiority. To expose that you know the truth of the matter. What is the truth of the matter? Well, the truth of the matter is that bullies and authority are typically inferior in their academic and emotional intelligence, which are major attributes for their bullying behavior, is to face possible ridicule or even the loss of your job for calling that out. Working with bullies is similar to trying to put lipstick on a pig. It just doesn't work. Dare we put lipstick on the pig and then say she thinks she cute? No, because then we have become the bullies. David in the Bible had this to say about bullies with power in his prayer to God. He reached down from on high and took hold of me. He drew me out of deep waters. He rescued me from my powerful enemy, from my foes who were too strong for me. They confronted me in the day of my disaster, but the Lord was my support. He brought me out into a spacious place. He rescued me because he delighted in me. The Lord has dealt with me according to my righteousness, according to the cleanness of my hands. He has rewarded me, for I have kept the ways of the Lord. I am not guilty of turning from my God. All his laws are before me. I have not turned away from his decrees. I have been blameless before him and have kept myself from sin. The Lord has rewarded me according to my righteousness, according to the cleanness of my hands in his sight. To the faithful, you show yourself faithful. To the blameless, you show yourself blameless. To the pure, you show yourself pure. But to the devious, you show yourself shrewd. You save the humble, but bring low those whose eyes are haughty. You, Lord, keep my lamp burning. My God turns my darkness into light. With your help, I can advance against a troop. With my God, I can scale a wall. As for God, his way is perfect. The Lord's word is flawless. He shields all who take refuge in him. For who is God besides the Lord? And who is the rock except our God? It is God who arms me with strength and keeps my way secure. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer. He causes me to stand on the heights. He trains my hands for battle. My arms can bend a bow of bronze. You make your saving help my shield, and your right hand sustains me. Your help has made me great. You provide a broad path for my feet so that my ankles do not give way. And that was from the 18th Psalm. And my prayer is that your ankles will not give way as you stand. And I will close with this proverb. Getting wisdom is the wisest thing you can do. And whatever else you do, develop good judgment. If you prize wisdom, she will make you great. Embrace her, and she will honor you. Thank you for continuing this journey with me. And my prayer for you is that you gained some knowledge today that can be applied to your life and the lives of others as wisdom. Let's value wisdom and walk in the power that we have so graciously been given together so that no one of us has to walk alone. I will close this episode by uplifting the bravery of Dr. Bonnie Candida Bailey. And I ask that in her memory, you do not turn away from bullies or those who are the victims of such abuse. Join me back here in a couple weeks as we continue this journey. And in the meantime, be bold, be courageous, be unpimped.